Hello, I'm Paul Scott, and today I'm talking to the CEO and CFO of Traxys PLC. So hello, John, and hello, Max.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Thanks for your time today. Much appreciated. Just to confirm, I'm not charging a fee for doing this. I don't currently hold shares in Traxys, and we're not giving financial advice. This is just for general information. So thank you to the blog readers who sent in some interesting questions. Your results for the year ending 31st of July 2017 came out yesterday. So do you want to just briefly touch on the main points from the results, please?
Yeah, certainly. Thanks for having us. Before we get onto the questions, in terms of the summary for last year, we had a modest H1, which I'm sure your listeners and holders will know about, but that was followed up by a pretty strong H2, which we'd anticipated. And we ended up at year-end having experienced another year of growth. We didn't do any M&A during the year, which is one of our sort of growth tenets, if you like. But because of that, we ended up with a sort of larger cash pile than we did at the beginning of the year, and the strategy on that front remains unchanged. So the other highlight, I suppose, is during the year we bedded in OnTrack and SEP. So those were two acquisitions that we made in the back end of 2015, which was the last financial year. One of those is a software business within the ops division, the real technology and services division. And the other business, SEP, is very complementary within our traffic data division. So the earnouts for those businesses are just coming to an end, or SEP is at an end and OnTrack is later this month. And they've performed really well. And then the other highlight is the investment that we've just undertaken, I suppose it's post-year end, in terms of Vivacity, which maybe we'll come on to later on, but that was an investment in a machine learning software business.
Okay. I described the results in my blog as I think solid but unspectacular or something like that. But that's a lot better than what was expected over the summer, because there was quite a significant wobble in the share price, wasn't there? It dropped sharply over the summer. I mean, if my memory serves me correctly, wasn't that to do with delays on renewed software contracts because of rail franchising delays? Is that right? And did that all get resolved, presumably?
Yeah, I think the first half was challenging, a bit less than we expected. And I think all we did at the time was to flag there was a lot to do in the second half of the financial year, because we'd left ourselves with a lot to do, and fortunately we managed to deliver on that. So we had a very strong second half. But you're right. At the time, there was a couple of delays on the software renewals, and there was no franchise bid activity, and we had some structural challenges to overcome in our traffic and data services division, which we sorted out, did all that, and as a result we had a very strong second half, probably our strongest second half we've ever had. And I think where we ended up at the end of the year, considering where we were 6 months ago, I think we're very pleased with.
Yeah, and I mean, the share prices reflect that, because I think it's up about 50% from the summer, isn't it, when there was that sharp dip. I mean, I know this is, for me personally, this is one of those shares where if there is a sharp sell-off, I tend to buy the dip, because historically it's always recovered, hasn't it? So that's good news. And then the biggest ever contract you refer to in the results narrative, I'm just wondering, is that a one-off license win, or is it a more of a SaaS-based revenue that will be spread over several years?
It'll be spread over several years. It's with a large train operating company in the UK, and it's multi-years. It runs for 4.5 years, I think, and it is implementing our Trax Enterprise software, which has been in development for a long period of time. We're delighted to have won that, and we're working with a client now. We're starting to roll it out. There's a license fee, there's hosting, there's some customization, some configuration, some support. It's an all-encompassing deal, and it'll provide a good base for the next few years, and we're really hopeful that we'll be able to convert other train operating companies as well. Once they can see that this is live and working at a major TOC, then hopefully the rest of the market will follow. But I think the challenge for us is to get it implemented, prove that it works, and go from there.
So this sounds like a fairly major reworking then of your existing software packages. Is that right?
Not so much a repackaging. It's a significant additional functionality, and the bulk of the uplift in price is actually because we're replacing legacy British Rail systems. Mm. And obviously those systems are fairly large, and they've been around for a long time, and there's obviously risk, if you like, from the operator's point of view about pulling them out, but we know we can do it, so it's new functionality rather than repackaging.
Okay, and I saw there was a very bullish sounding note out from Investec Thursday, either yesterday or today, where they sounded pretty upbeat about organic growth potential. So that's quite encouraging. What's next? Just pulling out some individual points from the accounts that I picked mm-hmm. up on. Sure. I saw that the cash pile has obviously grown significantly again now, and it's mm-hmm. just over 10% of market cap, 15.35 million. I noticed, though, that you've got 5 million of contingent deferred consideration within current year payables. So mm-hmm. am I right in thinking that I should really offset the two and regard you as having a sort of war chest of surplus cash, if you like, of just over 10 million? Is that fair to say?
Partly yes, partly no. The contingent consideration relates to two deals we did a couple of years back. So it's year two in respect of SEP and OnTrack. The SEP one will get sorted out imminently. That's all earned and due. The OnTrack one is an interesting one. That's the majority of it. And some of it has been earned already, and some of it is still to come. And the bit that is still to come will be, I think the earn-out ends in November, so it's linked to a potentially a sale that those guys are working on at the moment. So if that happens, great, the full amount will be paid. If it doesn't happen, then it won't. So partly yes and partly no to answer your original question in terms of should you offset it. You should offset some, because some of it relates to the cash that has been achieved, but some of it hasn't yet been earned.
But we're hopeful it'll be great to
pay that out.
Yeah, and I suppose also by the time that it's payable, you will have generated more cash anyway, wouldn't you, from those businesses? Yeah.
There's
just a slight echo on the audio. I think maybe we might be picking up a bit of feedback. Could you possibly sit a bit further apart? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's, I'm happy to do that. I'll go and sit in the other room.
Sorry about that. I thought I'd better mention it.
He might be listening. the earn-out, I think Max has answered your question, but the earn-out to some extent pays for itself, because obviously if we land that contract, there's money in versus money out. But we're hoping that it's not going to be a hard edge, if you like. So we're confident of winning that contract in the next coming weeks, if not months. And
which contract was that, John?
Sorry, the earn-out mechanics relating to OnTrack.
We're confident,
obviously, that it will get paid out. Max mentioned the deadline of the end of November. If it stretches past that, then so be it. But obviously the carrying value, because we didn't impair that or change that, we're confident that hopefully most of that, or if not all of it, will get paid out.
Yes, okay. Now, just on development spending, I know a lot of software companies sort of inflate EBITDA quite heavily by capitalising development spend, but I couldn't see any capitalised development spend in your accounts. Have I missed it, or is that the way you account for things?
It's all written off, and because we have this discussion with our auditors every year, and we don't believe we meet the criteria for capitalisation, so we spend some. So when you see EBITDA and PBT, they're clean, Paul.
Excellent.
They are. So the intangible assets on the balance sheet is all acquired goodwill, and nothing's capitalised, but we'll keep that under review as we progress, but for the time being, everything's written off, which is good.
Yeah.
And I think,
nice and prudent. I like that.
Well, it's sensible, and all the fund managers we speak to, they recognise that's the best thing to do as well, in their opinion.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
I have to say, Paul, just on that point, because I know it's topical, we've talked about this in the past, because everybody sort of writes that back, and fund managers truly do, but I know that when we're speaking to our auditors, that they were quite keen to make sure that we can sort of demonstrate that. So there's definitely a changing of the guard in terms of how people view that, but as Max has explained, we our preference, and because we meet the criteria, we can just write it all off as we go.
Yes, yes, okay. Now, one of the readers, Mohit, raises a query that I raised in my article as well, and sorry if this is sensitive, but the share-based payment charges look quite hefty. It was about $1.3 million this year and $1.1 million last year. Mm-hmm. And Mohit asks, he says it's about a 20% increase. Is this likely to be the run rate going forward for share-based payment charges?
It's a good question, and we have a very popular staff share scheme where staff can exchange bonuses for share options, and it's got a huge take-up across the group, and that leads to a large charge, unfortunately, and it's a really good tool in terms of motivating, retaining, and attracting staff, and it's been really successful in the past, so I'm loath to stop it. Just to say, the share-based payment charge doesn't relate to myself or John. We have an LTIP scheme for us, and we didn't meet the criteria this year.
Okay.
It's based on TSR and EPS, so that wasn't met, but you still end up with an accounting charge in there. But we didn't benefit from this, so it's not us filling our pockets. This is and just to reassure Mohit, the charge going forward, I expect it'll be something similar, maybe $1 million each year. But it's a good scheme, and it's worth doing. And whether people are just for that or not is their decision. But
it's
the right thing to do.
And his fair enough. And his other question is about gross margins. He says, Mohit says, there seems to be some pressure on gross margins, which would drop from 60% to 55.7%. What's caused that, and is this the likely future run rate on gross margin?
Well, we don't tend to look at gross margin. We tend to focus on net margin. And if you look in the segmental analysis, which is in the report, you can see the detail in terms of we split out the margin, the net margin, and EBITDA margin from rail technology and traffic and data services. The components of gross margin and admin expenses, it depends on what's in revenue, because some of the revenues have a direct cost of sales, some of them don't. So some of the software costs go into admin expenses, some of the direct site costs for traffic and data services go into gross margin. So I wouldn't get too drawn on the gross margin absolute numbers, because it depends on what's in revenue. I would focus on the net margins. And I think if you look at the segmental analysis, it's all analysed in there, and that would be a better metric to look at.
Yeah, but I saw that in the segmental analysis that the rail division has been the sort of profit powerhouse, both in absolute terms and in growth, and the traffic division actually dropped in profit this year. I mean, can you elaborate on that, perhaps?
Yeah, the rail technology includes our software and remote condition monitoring offerings, which tend to be higher margin, as you'd expect. The traffic and data services is more labour-intensive, so it does naturally have a lower margin. And it had some challenges in the year, which I think we alluded to in the first half, but we sorted them out. We took out a lot of costs in that business. I think it's, £600,000 on an annualised basis. And that's all been done now, and the benefit of that started to come through in the second half, and you'll get the full year impact in this current financial year.
Oh, I see. So the H1 figures for that division should be significantly better than I would hope.
I would hope so.
Yeah, okay. And I think Mohit's third question, we can't really ask, but he's asking basically for price-sensitive information on current trading and stuff, so we'll abandon that. Now, just we always talk every year about USA expansion. And I saw that you've appointed a reseller, a channel partner, I think you called it, and the sales have grown but are still very, very modest in absolute terms. I mean, can you give us some idea of the timescales for that potentially huge market opening up for you? Because you always seem to be on the cusp of big things there.
I'll maybe field that one. The short answer is no. we can't give you a timeline. I don't think it's us that necessarily creates that expectation, but moreover the market and sort of bulletin board heroes and things like that. The RCM business has been a fantastic acquisition for us. That's the MPEC business. We're a preferred partner to Network Rail in the UK, and it's a very profitable part of Traxys. We have boots on the ground in the States, and after sort of two and a half years of pilot work, if you like, with Class 1 railroads, we now have good revenue and profit coming through from that territory. But our growth plans are sort of broader than that. So to answer your question, and it's a question that I get asked a lot, I've no doubt that the US market will open up in a significant way in years to come, but we don't stick that into our forecasts because it's almost impossible to understand or anticipate when you're going to be on the sort of interesting part of that bell curve. And what that means is that we have to sort of come up with ideas elsewhere of how to grow in a sort of predictable way. So because it's difficult, it's, you know, the customer base over there, the RCM concept is new. They're very big companies, so each one of the class ones is sort of the equivalent to Network Rail in terms of budget spend and miles of track and things like that. And it's obviously quite geographically dispersed, so it is a long sales cycle. It is impossible to predict, but it was completely new to us several years ago. And since then, we're now working with one of the biggest class ones and speaking to lots of the other ones. And that's probably about as good as I can answer that question, Paul.
Okay, fair enough. And then obviously the question everyone always asks is about acquisitions. You indicated that you've had quite a lot of things that you've been looking at, but you've got the war chest of cash, of course. I mean, shall I throw it over to you to expand a bit more on that issue?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go onto the Traxys website, we have a very clear stated strategy of what we look at, how we value companies, what commands high valuation, low valuation. In a given year, we might look at anywhere between, 15 and 30 businesses.
Wow.
And some of those are extremely quick looks because we know that it won't be for us, and we get opportunities through from the industry and from the usual sources like accountancy companies and legal firms. Mm-hmm. The bulk of the pipeline that we're interested in are companies that are complementary to Traxys that we know about, as in people, technology partners that we work with, or people that have very interesting IP that is part and parcel of the sort of DNA of rail and traffic and transport in the UK. And those are the businesses that we court. And in terms of why we didn't do a deal last year, I suppose the reasons are multifaceted. Some are to do with valuation. Some are to do with the trading of those businesses as we're sort of monitoring them and engaging with them might have a wobble. But fundamentally, nothing has changed in terms of our approach. We want to spend the vast majority of the cash that we're sitting on in terms of furthering our product portfolio. And M&A is a key part of that. So we've done, just to recap, we've bought 8 companies in the past, I think 8 or 9 years. They've all been paid for out of retained profit, and we want to carry on that trend. And if you do the analysis on how we've bought, how well those companies have performed post-acquisition, we've got a pretty good track record, and we don't want to sort of, there's no sense in pushing the wrong deal just to sort of, for short-term gain. I think institutions quite like the fact that we're sort of savvy investors.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's buy and build type shares usually blow up sooner or later because they overgear or they just overpay or they just buy rubbish. But I mean, you haven't put a foot wrong, really, and you haven't used any debt either, have you? I mean, is that
going
to remain the strategy?
Well, at the moment it is because we've been debt free since inception. And never say never, but the pipeline that we've got, we know that we can fund it all from retained profit and reserves. So,
And I mean,
that'll be the story for the next year.
Yeah, and looking at the Stockopedia statistics here, I see that your share count, shares in issue, in 2012, 5 years ago, was 24.6 million, and it's only risen, less than 20% to 28.2 million now. So shareholders really, don't have to worry about dilution, do they?
Well, we've only raised £3.9 million in 12 years.
Mm.
So, and we've got as per the accounts you're looking at, we've got 15.3 in the bank. I know it's higher than that. So we're slightly atypical in terms of a technology company using public markets.
Yeah, absolutely. No, one of a kind in a way, really. Just looking at the accounts as well, one of the readers, Guy, flags up a question that I raised in my blog as well about the receivables balance on the balance sheet looks high, but I think I know what you're going to say the reason is, but over to you.
Yeah, it's just timing on that one. There's nothing sinister in there. It's just timing of when we invoice and stuff. We had a bit of a a push at the year end to get some of our event work invoiced and our traffic and data services. And then there's a bit in there in respect of the major contract win we announced, which part of it was invoiced in advance. So it's just it's timing. There's nothing alarming, and obviously it's all been paid now, so no issues there.
Brilliant. Okay. Let's move over to questions from Ram. I think we've already covered his first couple of questions, but the third question, he says the one potentially exciting news to me was the investment in Vivacity Labs. Could you please expand on that?
Yeah, sure. The investment in Vivacity Labs is related to, I suppose, innovation within our traffic and data services division. So that business is the largest provider of transport studies in the UK, and what that means is counting people and cars and classifying them. So we end up with a lot of video footage each year. I think we do something like 400,000 hours of video capture per annum. The investment into Vivacity Labs is a move to try and automate using machine learning software. We want to automate the counting and the classification. So there's a very direct cost that we're aware of within Traxys for delivering those studies. And if we can somehow speed up the time to which we can turn around that data, and in doing so save money, and potentially sort of provide a barrier to entry or an enhanced offering to our customer set, then great. So the Vivacity company is based in London, a very nice, smart bunch of guys that are all sort of ex-Cambridge by education. They've got fantastic technology. Traxys has invested £1.3 million, I think, when all said and done. We've tranched it subject to milestones that are related to Traxys receiving tangible benefit from that software, and we hold a seat in the board. So I spend time with that team every month, and who knows where. I mean, I think that company will be a fantastic company in its own right, but obviously we invested because we think it will actually have a meaningful contribution to our top and bottom line.
Yeah, I was watching Dragon's Den the other day, and there was a chap who ran a company which was providing an app which told drivers where there was a free parking space. And it's using parking sensors and mobile phone information and so on. And it sounds like a very, very interesting growth area. I know you sort of monitor flows of people using their mobile phone signals and things, don't you? I mean, is that the sort of an exciting area of growth the way you see it?
It will be. I mean, it's all in sort of smart cities, connected infrastructure space. And we've seen some really interesting things over the past 12 months. We are sitting very squarely in the middle of that space, and Vivacity is sort of one element of that. We invested in a business a couple of years ago that also looking or approaching that from a slightly different angle, which is to do with mobile network data. So sort of trying to work out which mast your phone is speaking to, and then aggregating that information up to predict or look at how people in traffic move across very big environments. And I suppose from a Traxys point of view, we just have to cover our bases. But there should be, this year, there will be tangible benefit coming through from that investment from what we've seen so far. Watch this space.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, if anything you can do to get reliable Wi-Fi on trains, I think everybody would be worshipping you. Probably just the last question now, actually, is another one from Paul. This is going back to acquisitions, actually. He said, have you considered relaxing your criteria because, you know, you might be losing very attractive acquisitions because you may be being a bit too pernickety on price?
Yeah. Someone once told me the definition of generosity was a Yorkshireman and an Aberdonian combined or something, which I assume was in jest. So the answer to that is we would never pass up a deal on the basis of we would hope we wouldn't pass up a good deal purely on the basis of valuation. And there's always, you know, a way that you can structure deals. The reason that we didn't do a deal last year wasn't because we're too tight. Yes, because we've got a sort of growing cash pile, there's potentially, you know, I can understand why people might ask that question, but we generally stick to our principles. Although it's not necessarily predictable, and we try and do one deal a year, sometimes we don't. So I understand the point, but valuation is in isolation is really a reason why we don't do deals.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, I think we've covered all the reader questions there, covered loads of ground. Thanks ever so much. And are there any sort of points you want to make that we haven't covered?
No, I don't think so. It was a reasonable year, given how we started H1. And I'm very pleased how we've started this year, more to the point, looking forward. Okay. More to follow, hopefully.
Good. Okay. Brilliant. Oh, well, thanks for your time, gents. I'll let you get back to your grueling, punishing schedule of meeting fund managers and other investors. And, thanks for slotting me in with a half-hour slot to talk to you. Much appreciated.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.